Never know, no matter how much you pay, when immigration will come making difficulties. I would like a few extra words with her on a routine matter. He pulls out his BlackBerry. He fiddles with it. In goes the password once, twice, three times. I grin. He gives up in a flurry of frustration and reaches into his jacket pocket. He lays a grainy black-and-white picture taken from a CCTV camera on the counter. I have a better one on my phone, he says. They all lean over the counter. That's her, says Jean-Luc in triumph. I am already sliding backwards up the stairs. The corridor is a dead end. No windows in the bathroom. Nowhere to run. 10 rooms, 5 on the front, 5 on the back. The last door on the right beside the bathroom gives way to a kick. Thank God it's empty. I close the door quietly behind me, hoping the doorframe splintering isn't too obvious. The same net curtains cover the windows. Beyond them is a narrow alley and the back of a building. 1 floor up. About 3 meters. Footsteps on the stairs. Heavy, booted footsteps. Jesus. They are all coming. Henri, Jean-Luc, and Detective Fresson. They stop outside my old door. I try the metal casement. The handle is stiff. It hasn't been opened in years. It gives suddenly, jerking out of my hand. The window opens horizontally, the latch hanging down. Not the easiest of escape routes. I hang one leg out, lean my stomach on the edge, and roll my body over. The latch catches against my clothes. My shoulders burn as my arms take the weight. The plastic bag with the Kevlar hangs from my wrist. I look down and see bins. It is the back of the 7-Eleven. The thud is plastic, not metal. I land heavily, rolling my shoulders. The back door to the 7-Eleven is propped open. Cardboard boxes line the floor, piles and piles of stock. I push past and into the main shop. The street window is so covered with posters and flyers, I can't see what's going on. How many police are there? Has he brought a police van? I dial Leon. Start up the Vespa. The police are here, he says. No shit, Sherlock. He has the Vespa outside the door in under 2 minutes. As we turn the corner at the end of the road, I look back. Detective Fresson is coming out of Henri's, his shoulders slumped. No BlackBerry and no witness. Chapter 37. We pull up outside the retail park. Leon has sold it short. 5 out-of-town retailers and an Intermarché. Massive. I scan the space. Hundreds of cars, plenty of people. If the police are here, I can't see them. Leon pulls up onto the pedestrianized forecourt, right up to the Intermarché's glass doors. Concrete bollards keep the traffic out, but they are too widely spaced to bother the Vespa. He takes his helmet off. Get me a Fanta while you're in there, he says. I nod and smile and pat him on the shoulder, because I know I will not be coming out. I am never going to see you again. At the doorway, I do a quick scan. Leon is fiddling with the strap on his helmet, still astride the Vespa. A mother with a buggy and a walking toddler. An old man with a stick. A car full of watchers. A man on his mobile phone. Another car full of watchers. Okay, so the police are here. Did they follow Ferret inside, or are they waiting for him to come out? The store opens with the flower section. Black buckets up to the ceiling, a down-market version of the George V atrium. It widens out into fruit and veg. Homewares and clothing to the right, bakery on the left. I turn left. Confectionery has to be after bakery, surely? Magazines are after bakery, then toiletries, then crisps. I scan the ceiling signs and back up. The confectionery aisle is empty. I check behind me. They've got every chocolate bar known to man. The Hershey Kisses are down at the bottom beside the peanut butter cups. You have to be keen to find them. I pick up a packet and shake it. The little gold chocolates dance. almond. I turn it over. I look back at the empty space on the shelf. I shuffle all the Hershey bags, to be sure. I carry the packet to a till and wait. The line crawls forward. The woman in front of me has a trolley overflowing with pet food. She must have a dozen dogs. Finally, the dog woman is shuffling off. The till girl is harried and hassled and generic. If there was some terrible crime and I had to describe her, I would be falling back on words like grey, nondescript. But efficient. She's being timed. Any till girl slower than the pack risks having her basic wage job taken away. She looks up at me as I hand her the money.
As a gift?
Curious question.
Yes, I say. They are a gift. Have you tried our in-store cafe?
No, I haven't.
Perhaps I will.
She nods as she hands me my change, already lifting the next customer bar, not wanting to slow her run rate. I put the change in my jacket pocket, pick up the Hershey's, and look around for the cafe. I follow the sign, a bowl with steam rising off it. It is pointing towards the back. I round the final aisle and a woman is standing there. She is dressed like an air hostess, but she carries herself like special forces. Neat little blue suit, skirt a shade too short, silk blouse, stripy scarf, great legs, shiny French plait. Air hostess with a hint of extra services thrown in. Set against this is the double bulge under each arm. Holsters are a bitch under slim tailoring. The coil of wire behind the ear, and the way she scans the corridor up and back and round, up and back and round. Just like me. She focuses on the Hershey's and then on my face, and steps into my path. We are in the far corner of the store. The archway to the cafe is down at the end. No cameras. A blind spot. She turns to a fire escape door behind her, pushes the horizontal bar, pulls me through, and shuts the door quickly. I imagine a tail, rounding the corner of the aisle and carrying straight on, entrance to the cafe ahead. Nice, I say to her back. Neat. A service corridor stretches the whole length of the store, grey breeze blocks, the bare bones of the shopping mecca. Customers never see back here. I watch her walk in front of me. Slight awkwardness in the left stride, too slight to be a gun. Thigh knife. She walks fast, and I'm expecting her to stop at the loading bay, but she carries straight on, all the way to the end and through another fire escape door, behind the scenes in the next unit along.
What did it sell?
Beds. The loading area is the same as the Intermarché's, but much less busy. How many beds come and go in a day, after all? Rows of Grand Littier lorries line up, their loading ends pointing to the store. She climbs onto the running board of the nearest lorry. I brace as she throws up the tailgate, my hand inside my jacket.
It is not what I was expecting.
I had been expecting a lorry full of plastic-wrapped mattresses, bedstead stacked on end, and then I realised that this is a transfer vehicle to take us to the boss, so I was expecting empty. The huge trailer interior is filled with sleek chrome. A double-decker Airstream, the sort that might transport a pop star. I pull myself up. The air hostess is beside me, talking into her wire, and the tailgate closes. I edge along the silver side. It's so massive there is barely any room to squeeze through between the Airstream and the truck wall. Metal steps lead up to the open door at the front. Laughter, muffled voices, the sounds of guys having a good time. I put one foot on the bottom step, stretching up like an ostrich, and see a narrow lounge area, banquettes, a built-in table, Ferret and the three meatheads making themselves at home. My eyes narrow. They are already high. The boss is putting on a party and they have gone large on the free handouts.
idiots.
I glance towards the driver's seat. Empty. No keys. If we wanted to get out, how easy would it be? A steel container locked from the outside, with a limited air supply. An air supply that could be altered? There are so many ways this could go wrong. What if the boss is angry about the fuck-up of the first major heroin shipment to be landed in years? What if they have got us here to punish us? What if the Marquise has told him and I am delivering myself to him? Make yourself comfortable, the air hostess says, a hand on my arm. The hostess act is deliberate. She is here to escort us.
How far have we got to go?
It is a fair way, she says, smiling.
A fair way.
So how long? Give it to me in hours.
It is best that you prepare yourself for a long journey. Her voice is soothing.
It closes me down. I feel myself relax. My eyes droop, and then I get it. Something is making me dopey. I'm on her in a second, my adrenaline pumping, my knife at her throat.
Why is the oxygen down?
She stares up at me, calm. She hasn't moved.
It is nothing to worry about. It is a really long trip, overnight trapped in a steel box. We are just trying to make it pleasant.
My head swims. I stand back, scowling. I have spent a week trying to get into this position, to get into his orbit, since Slashstorm began counting down. And now I am actually on the way to see him. I don't like it. What is this? Last-minute nerves? She is walking away from me now, adjusting overhead lockers. I follow her long legs up the turning stairs. A double-decker. There are no seats on the top floor, more like low couches, cushions, a party bus.
Where are the hookers? I ask sourly.
They will be joining us later.
What?
What about me?
Her eyes consider me thoughtfully.
What would you like?
Gym slip and pigtails? My voice is laced with sarcasm.
There is nothing about this situation I find erotic. And really, that is saying something.
I'll be fine, I say, in case she takes me seriously. I could do with a good sleep.
I remember a line from that psych report.
Subject is a sexual predator with a moral compass that points due self.
And Control and Eric laughing.
That's psychoanalysis for you, Eric said. A day of in-depth analysis to find out she's selfish.
I still don't know why they found it so funny. I peer out of the windows into the dark of the container. The lorry is moving, but the feeling is subtle, like high-speed train travel. The coach's suspension is cushioning us. I imagine Leon, his face starting to worry, looking up and down the forecourt. He will go inside. He will do what I did and track down the Hersheys. He will ask the management if anyone has seen me. How long will he wait? I go back down the stairs, my balance all over the place. Ferret and the meatheads are out for the count. I turn my back to her, suspicion making me fast again. She holds out a tiny clear pot with a blue pill inside.
What? No red pill?
You know I am never going to take that.
It could be anything. I give her the full eyeball treatment.
It's to put you to sleep.
I roll my eyes.
Obviously.
So you can do what? I say, thinking of the Marquise.
It is a precaution to disguise the location of our destination. A weapons and wire check.
And if I refuse?
We will let you all out and you can go home. We're still in France. So we are heading north. That's not what I expected.
I take the pill in its tiny clear pot and stare down at it. I smell it.
Cellulose.
The whole situation reminds me of something. How long have I got to decide? She shrugs, I can give you a few more minutes. She heads back towards the stairs. I stare around at Ferret and the meatheads, out for the count without needing any persuasion. Easy, embarrassingly easy. I kneel beside them, checking their vitals. Heart rate normal, breathing deep. I pull back an eyelid. The pupil has rolled all the way to the top of the head. Drugged. When she comes back, I am still staring at the pill in my cupped hands. I breathe her in. She is calm. Nothing is riding on this. Could I fake it? Probably not. Breathe in, breathe out. I tilt the pill pot and jerk the pill to the back of my throat. It's down in one big gulp of bottled water. Her wide eyes watch me as I sink back onto the bench. I can see another pair of eyes, dark and glittering in the cobwebbed toilet in Courchevel. "It'll cost you," the eyes said, "everything you've got." As I lose consciousness, I remember what all this reminds me of. An old movie. A man took a pill to find out what had happened to his missing girlfriend, and woke up in a coffin, buried alive. Chapter 38. I stride along a desert floor. Powder slides beneath my feet. Mountain ranges hide the horizon. My strides pound forward. The wind blows my hair back. It blows like a hurricane till all my hair is gone. Flames douse my body, cocooning me in a pyramid of flickering gold. My clothes shrivel and curl. My skin crisps and burns. The flesh falls from my arms, from my face, from my body. My arms are gone. My legs are gone. But still I limp onwards on my twisted stumps. I am standing in the courtyard of a castle, the golden stone warm under my palm. The doors open and he is there in the shadows. "Welcome, Winter," he says. He is huge and scaled, and when he tilts his face, the shafts of sun from the window sparkle on his cheek. I am a tiny doll, a matchstick girl. His huge, scaly hand strokes my cheek. "Welcome," he says. I am lying on my back naked. The mirrored ceiling is above me. Hands travel up my body. Long fingers, feather light, stroke my skin. They glide over my breasts, circle my nipples, slide across the cotton soft skin of my stomach. I open my eyes. We have arrived. I am lying fully dressed on the bench. My feet are bare. My knives are gone. My holsters with their guns have gone. My phone has gone. The Kevlar has gone. I tilt my head to look out of the window. The lorry has gone. The coach is on a huge dusty plain, a mountain range on the horizon. The sun is low over the mountains, but pale. Is it going up or coming down? I am alive. That's all that matters. Murmured voices come from upstairs. Everyone is awake. I sit up. Out of the window, I can see lines and lines of coaches, silver in the sun. Someone is hurrying down the stairs. Ferret rounds the corner. He looks just like he did when my gusset was in his face, and I know exactly what is going on upstairs. The hookers have arrived. He slows at the sight of me. Awkward. "So we're here." My gesture encompasses the coach park, the desert, the mountain range. He peers out of the window like he hasn't even noticed. "Have you got any of your weapons left?" He shakes his head. "What about your phone?" He shakes his head again. I let myself into the tiny toilet. I dig out my toothbrush. I smooth Snow White's hair.
Her big brown eyes are red-rimmed from sleeping in contacts. Something feels uncomfortable, and I twist my arms behind me. The movement is not as painful as it has been. My back is greasy to the touch. My bra is loose. I pull off the t-shirt and squint at my back in the mirror. The bruise feels easier. I scrape my nails across the skin, smelling the thick ridges under my nails. Arnica. Someone has put arnica on my bruise while I was sleeping. In the mirror, Snow White shrugs. She doesn't know what to make of it either. I need to eat. The mini kitchen has a pile of baguettes in plastic on the side by the tiny sink. I rummage around, taking out every item in the cupboards to see what else there is. Salt, sugar, Nescafe, yellow Lipton, yellow bloody Lipton, powdered hot chocolate. It feels Eastern European. If we were in the West, the coffee would be better. Fresh products, that's what I need. Items that might have been bought here. I open the fridge door. It is inserted ingeniously under the countertop. Bottle of milk. Well, that narrows it down. No milk in India, China, or Japan. I pick the bottle up. Lait et crème. French. It was bought in Marseille. I slam the fridge door, looking out of the window. What weapon opportunities does the kitchen offer? I throw open all the drawers, peer into every cubbyhole, examine every tiny space. A corkscrew is the best I can come up with. It's one of those simple ones, a handle with a corkscrew spike in the middle. I slip it into my back pocket, better than nothing, way better than nothing. Ferret is still sitting awkwardly at the little table. His hand shakes, a vein below his eye twitches, his fingers feel for the scar in his hair. He is coming down. I sling him a baguette sandwich. You'll need to eat. He stares at it. I sit down at the tiny table opposite him and unwrap my sandwich. Processed ham, tomato, cucumber, lettuce. The bread is Western. You wouldn't get this kind of bread in China. But then again, it could have just come in, like us, on the lorry. So basically, a processed baguette can tell you everything or absolutely nothing. I bite down. Let's look around. I need to work out where the hell we are. I make it sound upbeat and cheery, like we've just arrived in a holiday camp. He glances back up towards the turn in the stair.
Do you think we are allowed to?
Sure.
I gesture at the door hanging wide.
Maybe we should wait, he says, looking back up the stairs. Why?
I stand up. The metal floor is cold under my bare feet. We have been stationary for a while. It is a drop to the ground. The air is warm, maybe 15 degrees. The ground underfoot is grass with bare patches of sandy soil. I drop to my knees, running my fingers through it. Almost sand. Behind me, Ferret jumps down. The caravan beside us is 50 meters away. I circle the airstream. The ones in front and behind are the same. Close enough to block our view, but far enough away that they're not on top of us. It would have to be an active decision to visit the neighbours. You couldn't sneak up on them. Quite a logistical operation setting all this up. I wonder what it looks like from the air. Something ought to be showing up on a satellite somewhere. How many coaches like this are there? How many party buses? High ground, that's what is needed. I stare up at the outside of the coach. It's two stories of sleek chrome and glass, not designed with footholds in mind. Then I remember the roof lights on the upper levels. I pick up a broom from the kitchenette on the way through. The girly show is in full swing on the top deck.
Don't mind me, I say, skirting nipples. Just passing through.
I stand on a couch and lever the Velux open. It stops at the typical 2-inch mark. I ram the broom handle into the gap and lean against it with all my weight. The hinges will give in or the handle will snap.
could go either way. The naked gyrations slow and the nearest girl stops to watch. Gym slip and blonde pigtails. I pass her the broom handle, punch out the Velux unit, put my hands either side of the opening and hoist myself up. A full body pull-up. My biceps burn, my stomach flumps down on the metal edge, my legs dangle. I wriggle and push. It's not elegant, but it gets the job done. I clamber to my feet. This is more like it. I can see the full scale of the coach park. About 80 coaches. Every vehicle is parked very precisely, an exact distance apart with a line of floodlights between it and its neighbour. I squint in the brightness. Millimeter precise. I turn a slow 360, and my mouth drops open. Khaki as far as the eye can see. Supply tents, a landing strip, a structure as big as a warehouse. An army. I am here to kill a man with his own army. A green canvas watchtower winks in the sun. Field glasses. Someone is watching me. I wave and grin, giving a thumbs up. When I drop back down onto the top deck, the action has moved on. I step over the bodies and head for the stairs. Gym slip and pigtail stands forlorn on the side. Ferret is sitting at the table looking out of the window.
You really don't want to go up there, I tell him.
The air hostess appears, minus her shoulder holsters. Unarmed, I guess there's no point in disarming us and then walking in with more weapons. Time to get some answers. How much did you get for this run? For a moment, I think she's not going to answer. 50, she says. That seems a bit tight. Especially if she is expected to put out $50,000. Some lost respect slides back to the man at the top. $50,000. For that, she's not just going to put out, she's going to do what it takes. Whatever it takes. One woman and a bunch of thugs. She must be good. Have you ever met the man at the top? He interviewed me. I'm on the staff. On the staff, like he's running a bloody multinational. So, what kind of interview was it? I ask with a hint of suggestion in my voice. Do you think I could get a gig like this? He doesn't fuck the staff, she says flatly. Then she laughs. More's the pity. So what are you? Ex-Special Forces? She shrugs, non-committal. Where are we? You need to relax, she says. It's several hours to wait. You seem very tense. I'm going to get nothing out of her without breaking something. I need a softer target. Pigtails is coming down the stairs, wide-eyed and needy as an Athena kitten poster. Stripy black and white tie, short game skirt, freckles painted on, school satchel over her shoulder. A pleading look in her eye. She was booked for me. The things I do in my job. Come on, I say. I haul her towards the back of the coach. She shrieks girlishly, probably part of the service. I push the door open on the bedroom, throw her down on the bed and kick the door closed behind me. Cue more girlish shrieking. The contents of the satchel make me smile. Not very schoolgirl. I unbutton my jeans and drag them down, step out of my pants. I leave my bra and vest on. No point in overdoing it. I crawl up the bed and kneel either side of her face. She looks up the length of my body, a little unsure, so I sit on the fake freckles until she gets the idea. A camera winks in the corner of the room. I blow it a kiss. I hope I'm making some bored guard's day. When I'm done, I swing a leg over her and go back to the satchel. She watches me from the bed, her face glossy.
The harness buckles over each hip. I choose a double-ended, slot it into place, and slide one half inside me. I kneel back on the bed, flip her over, and push up the gym skirt. No pants. Nice. By the time I have come three times, I am feeling a lot less tense.
Where are we?
Her face has left smears across the sheets where she's been thrashing.
Fuck knows, she says, barely opening her eyes.
The girly shrieking is gone.
I took a pill and woke up here.
Like the rest of us. I pull out, unbuckle the straps, step out of the harness. I got her off. No one could call me selfish.
Thanks, I say.
I slide into my jeans and turn for the door. She waves a boneless arm from her faceplant, her skirt still up around her waist.
No problem.
The air hostess is making a really big show of stacking kitchen cupboards.
Everything okay? She says.
Fabulous. I move into her personal space and keep going. She smells good. I back her right up against a teak cupboard, pressing my body against hers. She's wondering if I'm going to stick my tongue down her throat. I get the impression that would be okay. Her hands are wide, not resisting. Evaluating. Adjust and adapt. I spin her against my body, my arm round her throat. A classic chokehold. I squeeze.
Where are we?
She doesn't answer. All in a day's work. She knows I have no reason to kill her. She needs incentive. The corkscrew is out of my back pocket and in her face. She drops straight to the floor, rotating. She moves to side my leg, but I'm ahead of her. She's good, but I'm better. I stamp down and then my knee is against her neck, a guillotine choke. She croaks into her wire. I can see her counting as she stares into my eyes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
The corner of the work surface comes up to meet me as I topple forwards. Chapter 39. I open my eyes. Bars on the ceiling. Narrow truckle bed. Earth. Khaki canvas. Military prison. I'm in the camp. I sit up and swing my legs over the edge of the cot, tracing my right eyebrow with my fingers. Dried blood. Something hit me hard. The teak countertop swinging up to meet me. Knockout gas. Whatever they used was really fast. I guess it has to be.
You underestimate everyone around you.
The canvas flaps, and a soldier comes in. Coincidence, or was he watching? Buzz cut, 6'30". No weapons that I can see. He crosses to my cage, pulling the keys. The door opens outwards. He jerks his head. On your bike. I stay where I am.
Come and get me, big boy.
He is not falling for that. I can stay here all day, he says in bad English. Where am I? I try in Russian. Taking up space in my holding bay. His Russian is fluent, way better than his English. Come on, he says, you'll miss the show. Is that it? No slap on the wrist? The tent jerks up and down as I stand.
Sheesh.
The headache is punishment enough. I put my hand to my eye. Got yourself a right shiner, he says, grinning. Even scowling hurts. I roll my shoulders, flex my neck. He holds the flap open for me to pass. Nighttime. How long was I out? The huge sky is filled with stars. We are right in the middle of the military base. I can see the warehouse structure, the landing strip, the watchtower. A military Chinook is coming into land. We watch its tail end swing, twin dots of red against the starry sky. Cold edges up the backs of my arms. The air is cool. I shiver in my t-shirt. It must be 10 degrees lower than it was, and scented with desert and human. Cold, clean air for miles and miles, cut with testosterone. We walk between lines of tents until we're on a wider stretch, a main avenue full of soldiers dressed like my guard, not a weapon in sight. I feel the glances on the back of my neck, the sidelong stares. Everywhere, everyone is heading our way. The crowd hums with anticipation. We slow up at the entrance to the warehouse, and the press of bodies, mills, throngs, bottlenecks, pushing to get in. I've spent a week trying to get into the same room as this man, and now, finally, I am going to do it. The entrance is dark before me, and then we break through into the dazzling light of a huge arena. The place is massive, an aircraft hangar-sized space. The smell hits me before my eyes have had time to adjust. Men, the cream of global organized crime, and then above them, on the higher seats, rows of khaki. I scan the faces. They are all here. Yakuza, the Bratva, the Mafia, the Triads, the 'Ndrangheta, the cartels. Organized crime. I am right at its heart. Breathe in. Breathe out. Two soldiers stand in the aisle, controlling the crowds, sending people to the back. When they see my guard, they wave us through. I am a VIP, not a soldier. I get to take my place on the lower tier, a ringside seat. A ringside seat at what? Metal barricades circle bare earth, and in the center is a raised podium and a cage. Mesh stairs lead up to the cage door. We have had the girly shows, and now it is time for a bit of no-holds-barred violence. Thumping, pumping rock music hammers its way along the plank seating, vibrating the metal uprights of the scaffolding. Cold trickles down my back. I shiver in the warm air. How many times have we drilled the dark web looking for kill cages? Looking for millionaires paying to watch a fight to the death? Gladiator contests. There has never been any evidence. This is where all the rumours come from. This is why there is never any evidence. I search the rows for Ferret. He is near the front, sweating hard, his droopy face sallow. His eyes flick backwards and forwards along the rows. He is with the big boys now. He is terrified. The meatheads sit beside him, relaxed. They're looking forward to the show. They don't have the imagination to be as afraid as they should be. I gesture and point to my guard. He watches me edge along the metal gantry seating. Ferret looks up at the disturbance, the shuffling of feet, the sideways swinging of knees. He sees Snow White edging her way along, and anger joins fear.
What the fuck were you thinking?
He mouths the words over the pumping rock.
You are gonna get us all killed!
He is right. Eye of the Tiger pierces my skull, drilling like a woodpecker on the eardrums.
What are they fighting for?
I shout in Ferret's ears.
$1 billion.
Fuck!
And the promotion.
$1 billion, a promotion, and as much sex and drugs and rock and roll as you can manage. The Prince of Darkness sure knows how to throw a party. The lights go down and spotlight shafts cut through the darkness, tractor beams of white brilliance rolling around the audience, lighting up faces and then moving on. Eye of the Tiger plays on repeat. The border of earth around the podium, inside the barricades, fills with smoke. Dry ice. The cloying, choking white fumes crawl over the lower tiers, filling our lungs. Sirens sound, and police lights on the corners of the cage start to rotate, pulsing on and off, flooding the cage with blue neon. The compere climbs the podium stairs, a microphone in one hand and a bunch of keys in the other. He jams the mic in his armpit, wrestling the padlock. Behind him, two giants stand at the bottom of the stairs. The compere's words are lost on the rising tide of sound, the thunder of hundreds of heels stamping on wood, as the first contender makes his way down the main aisle. His bare chest gleams with oil as the spotlight locks onto him. Huge and tattooed. South American. Now the tractor beam is picking out his opponent, on the other side of the arena, another tattooed meathead. Colombia versus Mexico. They are climbing into the ring. The compere is trying to tell us something about the rules, but his words are lost under the wall of sound. He backs out of the ring, slams the gate, and locks the padlock. A klaxon sounds. The fighters throw themselves at each other with a thud that vibrates through the seating. No circling. The difference between every MMA bout I have ever watched and this one is the end. The first submission hold is the last. The audience groan. The padlock is opened, and the giants guarding the stairs are in the ring dragging the body out. A smear of blood sweeps down the center of the grey cage floor. A new contender is making his way down the aisle, accompanied by his own theme tune of pumping rock. The second bout follows the first, short and to the point. The klaxon screams. The third starts, and then the fourth, and I begin to understand. Battles are being fought, arguments are being resolved, grievances are being aired. Cage fighting as a way to settle turf wars. It will go on until there is one man standing, and then the boss will come, to see and be seen, in the ring to congratulate the winner. As the seventh bout starts, the Mexican Goliath in the ring is looking unbeatable. The sweat rolls down his blue-green back, his fists shine with blood. He raises his hands in the air and the crowd scream their delight. He holds his hands above his head in a slow hand clap. Is it over? I blink my contacts out onto the palm of my hand and drop them on the floor. I slide the sole of my heel aside and take out the small plastic sachet. The go pills. Round red pill, Dex IR. Green and white, next generation stanazolol. White caplet, codeine and keratin. The ultimate performance boosters relied on by soldiers facing enemy fire and insuperable odds, the last resort of the desperate. Even instant release, they will take 30 minutes to work. I don't have 30 minutes. I crush the pills in their plastic with my heel until there is nothing but a mess of powder. I tilt my head back and tip it into my mouth before I can change my mind. I've only taken them once before in my entire GCHQ career, and that was outside a nuclear facility in Siberia. How good am I, hand to hand? Pretty good. I was a black belt when I was a teenager, and that was before 10 years of government training. But, and it pains me to admit it, I am breakable. Every rib, an arm, my left wrist twice. Some fingers. Never a leg, thank God. So I have to be fast and accurate and lucky. One good hit, maybe two in the right place, by someone who knows what they are doing, and it's game over. I dry retch as the Dex hits my system. I hang my head between my knees, the blood thudding in my ears, my hair grazing the concrete. The air is rank with bodies. I raise my head and the room spins. The neon lights on the corner of the cage flash a dazzling kaleidoscope of colours, the silver bars sparkling in the rotating rays. It is beautiful. The roar of the crowd is drowned out by the pounding in my ears. My heart rate is accelerating. My skin feels too tight for my body. I get to my feet, my eyes raking the crowd. Anger floods me. I hate them all. The victor stands in the cage, roaring with bloodlust and self-satisfaction. I want to punch his face. I want to knock his teeth through the back of his head. I run down the makeshift planks and onto the floor of the arena. It is not over. It has only just begun. Chapter 40. I vault the metal barricades and leap for the gangplank. Behind me, Ferret shouts. He is nothing beside the rage building in me. The padlocked gateway hangs open above me. The giant's back down the steps, dragging the previous challenger. His face hangs down, dripping. I push past them into the ring. The compere looks at me, in jeans and a t-shirt, pulling my hair back into an elastic band. He doesn't get it. I ball my fists, trying to contain the surging power. Now he gets it. He shakes his head emphatically. No way. The cage sparkles with light, glitter hanging in the air, gilding the victor, crowning his head with silver. My kick catches the compere at chest height. The bars clang as his head snaps back against them. The crowd screams its disapproval. He slides down the metal, crawls to the gateway on his stomach, and pitches through. As he padlocks the door, his face is vicious. The victor stares. He cannot believe it. He turns to the audience looking for sympathy at this insult. His mistake. He has a hide like an old bull elephant. I could pummel him all day long, even with my dex fists, and I wouldn't knock him out. I know what he needs. I leap for the overhead bars and bring my heel down on the back of his neck. He crumbles in slow motion from the knee, and the crowd roars. The fury spits through me. I turn a 360, my canine snarling. The arena looks different from down here. Light surrounded by darkness. I can hardly see the crowd, but I can hear them baying for blood. Anger at this collective insult to the natural order of things. The spotlight shafts pick out pools of brilliance in the darkness. The lights dance against my eyes, messing with my vision. I shake my head against the angry buzzing in my blood. The compere is undoing the padlock, and then he is back, skirting the edge of the metal, his eyes on me, his face wary. A spotlight shaft picks out a tattooed figure hurling himself down the main aisle towards the arena. A challenger. I hang in the corner, my arms stretched wide behind me, holding back the power. I try to control it, to choke it down, to focus. Concentrate. Blood hammers round my body. The challenger is climbing into the cage, huge and muscled, shaven-headed and tattooed. He could be the bull elephant's brother. He is not going to get caught the same way. He charges straight for me before the compere is out of the gate. I slide sideways, but he grabs at me, fast for such a big man. It will be game over if he gets his arm round me, and for the first time since the dex, I feel the fear. He takes an elbow to the face, snatching at my arm. His fingers tear at my t-shirt, and he's forcing me to my knees. I dip and heave, and he goes over my shoulder, landing hard on his back. Triumph burns through me. The blackness descends. I open myself up to it, drawing it around me like a mantle. I kick him hard in the head. His nose streams with blood. Once, twice, three times, I watch Snow White from above, kicking a corpse. Sound returns. I face the crowd, screaming my defiance. I throw myself at the cage wall, spitting with anger. The next challenger is in. Fit. Athletic. A bare-knuckle boxer. I feel the shock as the blow connects with the side of my face. I spin away, but he clips me again, and I can taste blood in my mouth. Close it out. I punch and spin and kick. A sweeper kick to the head. He goes down. I am taking no chances, and I punch him once, twice, on the canvas. As the next opponent climbs into the cage, the crowd quieten as if they recognize him, and everything goes slow motion. He is Yakuza, wiry and fresh and vaguely familiar. He pulls off his jacket. He is wearing a t-shirt and trousers. He didn't come dressed for cage fighting. His eyes hold mine. I wipe my face on the shoulder of my t-shirt. The wipe comes away scarlet. The blow from the bare-knuckle boxer has opened the cut above my eyebrow. He steps forward. We bow. He steps back. The cage fight has just turned into a martial arts exhibition match. He stands in Manji Gamai, the preparatory position, ready to strike. One arm raised above and behind the head, the other blocking low in front of the body. I raise my arms in the corresponding block position, and we begin. Shuto yoko ganmen uchi, knife hand strike to head. Shuto jodan uchi uchi, inside knife hand to neck. Knife hand meet keri waza. I launch into the kick strikes. Front knee kick, front jump kick, circular knee kick, crescent kick. He has backed up against the bars. I round off the sequence with Nidan Tobi Jerry. Double front kick, and he is down, bouncing off the bars and hitting the deck, and I am on him, and there is nothing technical about my hand in his hair, my fist in his face. His sweeper kick saves him, but not before I have broken his nose. The bones are sharp under my fist. Gashes have opened up between my knuckles from the force of my punches. I spin away, and he is after me. I meet the Urazuki, the uppercut punch with the dropping forearm block, and feel my left wrist crack. I run for the corner, spin, grab the ceiling bars and kick out. Both feet connect with his face. He flies backwards and is back on his feet with an arcing curve of his lithe body. Blood streams from his nose, his pupils narrow to tiny black dots in his dark eyes, and I read the murder in them. Close it out. My swinging head kick has my full weight behind it. There is a snap like gunfire. His body keels over, neck broken. I drop down from the bars, spitting blood. My hair hangs in my eyes, out of its band. A man is walking slowly down the wide concrete stairs of the main aisle. He is tall and broad, with long legs and a face that haunts my dreams. Silence follows in his wake. It funnels out from the aisle, spreading through the arena like ripples in a pond. The crowd at the front turn and watch. Shaved head, olive skin, hot. He wears a white t-shirt and black combat trousers, his hands in his pockets. My eyes lock onto his as he stares down at me. I hang from the walls, plotting his movements, holding back the power. I swing my head to clear it, and my brain jolts against my skull. I taste the decks. He is at the stairs. He says something to the giants, and the padlock pops, and they are in the ring, dragging the body away. He is on the top stair. He is climbing into the cage. He comes towards me. He is as big as I remembered. I am going to plaster him across the bars. I am going to smash my fist through the back of his skull. I hurl myself across the cage. He grabs my wrist, and then he is behind me. Fast, faster than Eric, faster than anyone I have ever fought. His arms wrap around me from behind. My wrist stretches across my throat. Even through the decks, the pain burns like a brand. My good arm is pinned to my body. No! I buck and strain in his grip. I stamp and twist and bend. His chin rests on my hair. I smack my head back, but his face is down by my ear. Stubble scratches my neck. I bend at the waist, crashing him back against the bars, shifting, trying to gain some purchase against his weight, lowering my shoulder. My arms burn in their sockets. My wrist screams on a frequency just below agony. My legs buckle. Black bubbles pop in my line of sight. A band wraps itself round my chest, squeezing, crushing my ribs. They are cracking one by one as the band crushes them. Blood thunders in my ears. The wooden planks ring with the sound of stamping heels, the thudding keeping time with my heart. I can't breathe. I can't see. Chapter 41. Cold air hits my face. He hauls me through the tent aisles, fighting and flailing. My wrist is hard across my mouth, my good arm pinned in a half Nelson. Nausea hits me with the cold. Hot and cold, my deck's blood burns. Amp overload, black bubbles still pop in front of my eyes. We reach a tent entrance. Two soldiers stand outside like Praetorian guards. He says something to them, and then he is pushing me forward through the tent flap. Military khaki, a commander's tent, desk, seating, a central tent post. The flap lifts, and a guard is back with a pair of handcuffs and chains. The boss snaps a handcuff on my good wrist. He drags me to the central tent post and throws the chain around it and closes the other handcuff. He has left my broken wrist free. He goes over to a drinks cabinet in the corner and pours a drink. An inch of amber. Veins stand out on his forearms as he raises the glass. The white snake on his wrist comes into focus. It's not a tattoo. It's a scar. A wide scar, pale against his tan skin. He walks slowly towards me, filling the space. The light is dim, his face in shadow. He looks down at me, a frown on his face. Chest muscles like slabs. 6'5", 110 kilos, slim hips, strong jaw, lean, olive skin, dark eyes, stubble, sharp cheekbones. Warrior. When he finally speaks, his voice is appraising, the English tinged with Eastern Europe.
What have you taken?
Dex. He nods like he had guessed as much and holds the glass to my lips. Whiskey fills my mouth. I spray it in his face. He stands stock still while whiskey drips down his forehead, off his chin, down the front of his t-shirt. He walks to a basin in the corner and turns the taps on, reaching over his shoulder and dragging his t-shirt off. Muscles play across his tanned back. I remember the iron bands. Plenty of scars. No tattoos. He balls the t-shirt, throws it in the corner, drops his head to the sink and splashes his face. He picks up a towel and turns back to me. The light flickers across his chest. His biceps are the size of my thighs. There is a voice from outside. He goes to the doorway, talking to someone, drying his face.
They have gone.
He pours another drink and walks back to me. Bare-chested. There is nothing spare about him, not an inch of flesh. A line of dark hair trails down his stomach, down beneath his waistband. He takes a swig of whiskey and grips my jaw with one hand. The long fingers are as hard as the arms were. This is what the Marquise meant by charisma. His physical presence is intimidating. Sculpted lips close over mine. Whiskey pours down my throat.
Swallow, he says against my mouth.
His bare chest is hot. Choke or swallow?
I swallow.
The whiskey burns my throat. I swing my good arm around his neck and throw myself backwards with all my weight. Whiskey flies as he crashes over, the chain looping around his neck. I get my knees and then my feet up to his chest and haul on the chain with all the deck strength I have left. This is it, shit or bust. It is awful, ugly, desperate, twisting and turning in a puddle of whiskey. My face cowers from his punching, flailing fists. His fingers scrabble at the chain, but he can't get purchase. He is so strong. My arms burn. It goes on and on. There is an almighty crack. And all the tension goes. The tent post has cracked. He is on his hands and knees, choking and heaving great dry wretches, pulling the chain off his neck. He has me at the door, bringing me down with a bone-busting tackle and yanking my arms behind me. Something hits me on the back of my head, and it all goes dark. Burning feathers. I choke and gag, jerking my head away from the fingers under my nose. My body jackknifes, restraints hold me down, ankles and wrists, bands across the body. The bright lights of an operating theatre. Hard fingers on my chin, a needle torch above my face. The fingers take the pulse in my neck. They grip my chin, urgent.
Can you understand? He asks in French.
Why is he speaking French?
For a moment, I can't remember. And then I realize he has found Ferret. You are going to get us all killed.
Who sent you? Who do you work for?
I'm sorry, I whisper in Russian. Tears prick the corners of my eyes. It was the Dex. It made me crazy. I scrabble for his hand. Please believe me. Tears track down my cheeks. He touches them with a fingertip.
You are a lying bitch.
Fuck you, asshole.
Emil.
His voice snaps the order, his hand palm up impatient. His fingers are long. He pulls my right arm straight, a needle rams into the vein. Amobarbital. The only thing I have no defense against. The thing that Everard used to crack me in the GCHQ detainment suite. He smiles as he sees the fear in my eyes.
You will tell me everything, he whispers beside my cheek, gentle as a lover. Everything. Until there is nothing left but your bare soul.
Above me, the operating lights burn white. The whole room burns with brilliant flame. I see Simon and Everard and Eric. I see the Marquise. I see 12 faces and their scrolling counters. His face swims above me, a black silhouette against the brilliance. The needle is out, but something is left behind. An IV. I tilt my head. Flashes of white dance on the syringe, emptying fire into my arm. The liquid floods through my body, burns through my veins. A defibrillator hovers above my chest, waiting. No one is going to let me have a heart attack. I shove Winter down as far as I can. I shove her below the operating level, below the colonel. Run, I tell her. Hide. I am Snow White. I am Russian. I am a hitman.
Chapter 42. Muffled voices, wet earth, the beep of medical machinery, pain in my wrist. Still alive. I can remember nothing, nothing about their amobarbital. What have I said? My eyelids flutter and squint. Canvas roof, medical supply boxes. A field hospital, not the operating theater. I have been moved. There is a new IV in the back of my hand. I follow the clear tube to the swinging bag above me. My arms are lying on the bed beside me, pinned to my sides, like I have been laid out for burial. I flex my left wrist in a plaster splint. The tap is still in my right elbow. 3 bands hold me on the bed. There are figures in the shadowy space with me. Outside the pool of light. They murmur. Doctors. When they come into my field of vision, I see there are 2 of them. I close my eyes as they approach and take a deep breath. I can hear them muttering, checking monitors. One leans down to pull up an eyelid, and I snap my head up and smack him full in the face. Something cracks. I haul my good arm free, skinning the back of my forearm, and pull him down on me. Circling his throat.
Untie me, I hiss.
The other medic stands horrified, paralyzed. I tighten my grip and he hurries to comply. I strain towards the door as he fumbles with the buckles. I am free. There is a needle stuck in the back of my hand. I rip at the tube with my teeth, and it comes away, leaving the metal still embedded. Thick red blood wells up around it. The pain is so bad I want to close my eyes. Cold shivers of nausea grip me. The medic is limp against me. I thrust him away from me and he falls to the floor. I swing off the trolley and face the other. I have to take him down. My legs are like jelly. He opens his mouth to shout. My knife hand strike gets him in the throat and he keels over backwards. The one with the broken nose is the smaller of the two. I strip off his khaki. My fingers work his buttons in a frenzy. My splint makes me clumsy. Why have they put a splint on? My limbs stagger, like waking from a deep sleep. Adrenaline is keeping me up. I pull the top and trousers over my hospital gown. His boots are massive. I need to go now. Never run. It is what they expect. I grab a scalpel from the tray and throw myself down behind the medical supply boxes that line the shadowy edge of the tent in a long, low wall. I'm barely there when there is a flurry of movement outside and the sound of a canvas flap being pushed aside and the boss is striding into the tent.
Son of a bitch!
He swears long and low as he sees the empty bed, the unbuckled straps. His anger and disbelief fill the room. He swirls around and I think for a moment he sees me, but then he is looking at the guy in his underwear and realizing I am dressed in khaki in a camp full of soldiers. And now he is really mad. He raps out orders in rapid Russian, closing the main gates. Then he is gone, and I can hear him issuing orders outside, marshalling an army to find me. Anger rings in every syllable. Medics pour in through the flap, kneeling by the bodies, bringing round their fallen colleagues. I wait a long time in the dark. 10, 20 minutes, maybe more. The longer I can leave it, the better chance I have. Panic fights training. My body shakes with the adrenaline come down. I am cold, the fear making me clammy. I can hear searching. Pursuers. I bite my hand on the panic. Wait. Breathe. Wait. I cut a tiny hole in the canvas beside me. Supply tents. Medical. Back to back. I cut a long, low slit 6 inches off the ground and tuck the scalpel down inside my splint. This is it. My head swims as I try to move. I crawl through the gap and flatten out, my heart pumping. The night is cold and dry. Desert dry. I can see an aisle. It's busy, soldiers marching back and forth. When they can't find me, they will search the trailer park, and then they will widen out, open the gates. Either way, they will be using their vehicles. I stand up and walk confidently out through into the aisle. Not quick, not slow. People searching are trained to look for quick, furtive movement. Move slowly right beside them, and they don't see you. I hit the main aisle, my legs shaking, and try to get my bearings. The cage is behind me, the main gate in front. I turn right and walk towards the jeep park, not quickly, not slowly. 100 meters in the open. The watchtower stands over to my right, full beams circling like a lighthouse. I remember the jeep park from my 360 on top of the trailer. There were more than 50. I walk down the line, 10, 15, 20. Nothing. The panic is rising in my throat when I see a glint of silver keys in an ignition, and I almost sob with relief. I pull open the driver's door and slide behind the wheel. In the darkness behind me, there is the click of someone taking the safety off a handgun. I put my hands up.
Turn around.
He is still. Fading into the shadows. Silence.
Are you on your own? I say.
Yes. Because I know how you think, Snow White, he says, answering my question before I ask. FSB trained? Never run. I knew you were behind the boxes.
If you are going to shoot me, shoot me. I spit the words. Spare me the monologuing.
Oh no, he says. You don't get off that lightly.
What do you want? Didn't you get it all from the amobarbital?
He waves his hand dismissively.
I don't want information. I want capitulation. I want submission. I want to break you.
You think you can turn up here and crash this party?
He puts the safety back on the SIG and puts it in his holster.
Do you know what happens when two predators meet? One of them loses? I want your surrender.
My surrender.